Part one of our discussion about Survivor Africa on the all-time top 40 countdown is sponsored by our friends over at Hyundai, makers of the Hyundai Tucson, where they question everything to create the best Tucson ever. For more information, learn more at Hyundai.com. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Sestrino back to talk with you here on the Survivor Top 40 Season Rankings Countdown. And here we are. Big milestone this week as we were talking about the 21st best season of Survivor, Survivor Africa. That puts us at the halfway mark after this week with 20 seasons down and 20 to go. But first, we're going to have a great panel talking about the third season ever of Survivor, Survivor Africa. And we have two wonderful women here with us to talk about everything from Survivor Africa. First, let's bring in a woman who has been podcasting about The Bachelor on RHAP for 7 years now. Can you believe it? It is the great America's Next Top Model expert, Haley Strong.
You're aging me, Rob. I want everyone to think I'm this young ingenue.
Yes.
Fit for the Samburu tribe.
People Samburu? Think you were an overnight success to get here, but it's been hard work. 7 years.
It's been a lot of work. I've had to let go of a lot of morals. I think, like Lindsay Richter, I've made a lot of mistakes on film.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, right?
All right, Haley. Well, very happy to have you here with us. And another Lindsay, not Lindsay Richter, of course, wonderful podcaster of the Simpsons Then and Now and BoJack Horse Pod, of course, the auteur that put together the oral history of the sleepover. It's Lindsay Wilson. Lindsay, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hoping to be less of a disappointment than the other Lindsay. She really let me down as far as the first Survivor Lindsay.
You were pumped up that there was a Survivor Lindsay.
I was so excited. Like, I was 11 when this was on, and I was like, oh my God, it's happening. It's going to happen. And she really let me down.
Yeah. Has there been a good Survivor Lindsay yet?
No.
Yes.
It's really no way around.
We're waiting for our first Lindsay to make the merge.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. None of them have made the merge.
One day. Okay. Brutal. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Okay. Very excited to have Haley and Lindsay here with us to talk about Survivor Africa here tonight. What you are watching or listening to right now is going to be part one of our recap of Survivor Africa. We're trying something new this week, and let me explain how it's going to work. We're going to do, in essence, the same type of recap that we've done all through the Survivor Top 40 season countdown, although these have been creeping up in the runtime on average that we are above 4 hours, which really not the ideal length for a podcast for many different reasons. So what we're going to do here is we're going to bring you part one, going to talk about the good and the bad of the season. We'll talk about everything that happens in Survivor Africa up to the pre-merge. Then that'll be the end of part one. And then very shortly after this, we will drop part two for you, where we will talk through everything from the post-merge of Survivor Africa and then get into your feedback questions and the survey results and tell you about what is coming up next week on the 20th best season of all time. So that's what's happening here in this episode. So look, basically, you all are getting two podcasts for the price of one. So congratulations. You have just got yourself one heck of a deal. So also, let's also remind our listeners that we've got a lot more coming up this week, including a Talking with T-Bird with Clarence Black. So very excited to, one, get to talk to T-Bird about Survivor Africa and also reunite her with her endurance challenge partner, her rock, paper, scissors buddy, Clarence Black, on the next Talking with T-Bird. We're going to have that for you this weekend. And then also, of course, for the patrons of Rob's Podcast, we are going to be live with the patrons at 4:30 Eastern with Amanda Danforth and Ariel Gomez is coming up on our patron feedback show. So any questions that we don't get to coming up in part two, we will also discuss over the weekend as we continue Survivor Africa Week here, the 21st best season of Survivor. Haley, tell me, when you had the option, we came to you and we said, basically, Haley, we desperately want you to be in the top 40 countdown. Pick any season you want. You tell us the week. You can have whatever. And you said, I want Survivor Africa. Why?
To be fair, I didn't say that.
What?
Can you believe it? I did. On my survey, I did point out one season that I said, please, please, please put me on this. I will cry if you don't.
Yes.
And then call me whenever. I don't care. Mm-hmm. So our good friend Sam slid into my DMs.
Hey girl,
and
hi.
Said, what's up? Survivor Africa? And I said, cool.
Yes. Did you get the season that you wanted to talk about?
I mean, I'm like free and easy. Like, I didn't want to talk about any of the seasons with some like heavier themes, sure, because that's not really my forte. So we're settling with some middle themes here in Survivor Africa.
Yeah,
there are some issues for sure. We'll get into it, I'm sure, over the next 7 to 15 hours. But I was excited. Survivor Africa is not really one I've thought about a lot. I do think it's the first season I watched live on TV. I have some very vivid memories, yeah, from watching it. And then I watched about 10 years later on my big rewatch of every season. At that point, there was 21 of them.
See, I thought that you just love all things Ethan, that you...
Well, it's funny because I really do think the season, watching it young and having a crush on this Ethan, set me on this lifelong trajectory to marry some dude named Ethan.
Yes. So
I really do think that has something to do with it, maybe.
Yeah. I get it.
I will say my current Ethan had a great time watching Survivor Africa because of past Ethan.
Okay. All right. So
that makes sense?
Yeah, good to know, Haley, and happy to have you here. Lindsay, what's your connection to Survivor Africa?
So I guess the biggest thing is that Ethan was my first and truest love, much like Haley. I watched it in real time. I remember vividly watching it. Like, Australia I really liked, but when I got to Africa, I think I was like reaching the age where I was old enough to be super invested in the characters. And like, I thought the animals were so cool and I just thought everything about it was awesome. I loved Big Tom. I loved Lex, but I especially loved Ethan, especially like once he got into the grassroots soccer stuff. I was like, he likes soccer. I like soccer. And he's so handsome and he cares about people. And I was just obsessed with Ethan. But since then, I feel like this season is just like, it's better than people remember, I think, a lot of the time. I think it's kind of underrated right now. It seems very low at 21, but like, it had the first twist. It has very memorable people.
Yes.
I just think it's great.
Yeah. So I think that Survivor Africa has a reputation of being a slower season. There's not that much going on, but I really enjoyed my rewatch this week of Survivor Africa. And again, I think it's all about perspective, because if you're like me, you've watched the 19 worst seasons of Survivor all in a row, and Survivor Africa is almost, in a lot of ways, it is not like a normal Survivor season. Yeah, it's a different show. And after watching 19 Survivor seasons where it's a lot of same, that this is very clearly something different. Now, it's not the same speed as a lot of the other Survivor that we've already watched, but as sort of just like a, you know, halfway through the season, you know, in the words of Big Tom, I don't mind getting the taste of mush off my tongue a little bit here with Survivor Africa. And it looks and feels so different than everything else in the Survivor catalog.
Survivor Africa, like licking the hind end of a hyena.
If we had to go back and look at that survey, I think I would have ranked Survivor Africa fairly low for the reasons you stated. I think maybe in the last 10 years, my memory's gotten a little clouded about Survivor Africa. It was a lot more strategic than I expected. I thought it was more dynamic than I expected. And I think out of probably the first five seasons, it's the best one. It's the most interesting one. And I know that it was hard for them. They couldn't get too strategic because they were so close all the time. And that was just a matter of where they were and the safety precautions they had to take. I had a great time. I had a great time on the rewatch.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yes. The biggest thing that jumped out to me is, again, the survival element of it all, where I don't think that there is another season of the show where that there is like real danger to the contestants from the wildlife that Lindsay, can you think of another season where that's even like a tertiary concern of the contestants?
No, not at all. Like, I remember even when you were covering Gabon, it was like, whoa, wasn't that cool? And they saw the elephant. And I felt like these guys, by the end of the season, they were like, meh, an elephant. Like, who cares? Because they just saw that stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think even one of the things that I thought was really stark was, like, the danger from the animals, but also, like, that first episode when Diane passes out and her eyes are rolling back. Like, there's no way medical's not coming in if that happens in season 41. So it just felt like the health concerns were very real here, too.
Yeah, this is a very punishing environment. And I mean, Haley, so many times that they're going to sleep at night, it's like, oh, wait, there's lions that are here to eat us.
Yeah, they literally
everybody said, quiet.
You can't all sleep at the same time because you have to watch for lions. But then I question, what are they going to do if the lions attack them? Like, what are they prepared? I don't think they're personally prepared. I actually, if you can believe it or not, I did make research for this. And I read the three quarantine questionnaires by Dalton Ross of Survivor Africa players. And, you know, it was mentioned that there were some guards there in case the animals got too close.
Oh, that's interesting. So there was like inside the BOMA, in addition to producers, there were armed guards.
Something like that. I think T-Bird mentioned it in hers.
Yeah, oh. T-Bird said that there were guys walking around with guns the whole time, like outside the perimeter of the BOMA. And then Lex also said that like people would go to sleep during their watch. So he and Tom ended up doing it for like the entire season because they were the only ones who could be relied on to keep the fire going. And like, anyway, it's apparently pretty dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, that it's a beautiful season, and I really enjoyed that on this rewatch. You know, I watched this for the Evolution of Strategy. I was watching some like bootleg, downloaded LimeWire edition of Survivor Africa, and Haley, this was the first time that I got to watch it on a streaming service. Watched it on Paramount Plus, and looks great still.
It was really beautiful. It was so striking. A lot of the visuals were ones that I deeply remember from watching in my childhood, like that, the hot air balloon, you know, the sweeping vistas. I will say it's unfortunate that they went with the name Survivor Africa. I wish they would have gone with Survivor Kenya. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm alone in that. It would have just been more specific, more representative of the area they're in, because Africa is such a large continent. It's hard to just look at it as a monolith because it's so diverse. And even the wildlife from North Africa to South Africa to more of Eastern Africa where they were, it's incredibly different. But it was beautiful. This really stuck in my mind as a child.
Yeah. Haley, I didn't know you were so knowledgeable about the wildlife.
I'm not as knowledgeable about the wildlife, but I am a geography nerd. Did I take a class in university just because I knew on the first day you did a quiz of the map of Africa? Yes, yes, I did.
Wow.
Did I score 110% on that quiz? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did
you
have to take
that
in high school social studies?
No.
Yeah. Well, it was very impressive. Very impressive.
After 7 years, Rob, we learned more things about each other. Right?
Yeah, I know. Would have thought? I mean, yeah, that basically, like, if you were in my alliance, I'd want you in that quiz. I feel like that you'd have a good shot.
You absolutely would.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want me in any other challenge. That ball rolling one, I would have been dead. I would have been crushed. I'd have been line bait. The arm holding up one, I'm out because I get too sore. Just, I probably would have been Diane and just like passed out and been like, I'm good. Take mm-hmm. me on the vacation. I'm ready.
Lindsay, why do you feel like Survivor Africa is not held in a more high regard by Survivor fans?
So I think part of the problem is, like, especially by the end of the season, everyone is basically dead. Like, the fact that they don't have water that they can drink, they are really pretty low on food. Like, they're just eating that, like, corn mush all the time. So everyone is basically incapable of strategizing, both physically, but then also just, like, they can't leave that space ever because they might get killed. So I think that means, like, down the stretch, there's not a lot of strategy going on. I think the beginning is really fun, and I think there's a lot going on there, especially like all that stuff with Lex. Like, he completely, I have no idea how he makes it through, but like down the stretch, I can definitely see why people would feel like it's maybe kind of boring. Like, I think there's some really amazing rewards and that kind of stuff, but if you're in it for the strategery of it all, I think you're not going to get that at the end.
Yeah. It's also, you know, I think that the suffering really wore on people as well. Yeah. And Haley, I do think that Survivor Africa is a great argument for a 26-day Survivor season.
I think that's fair. I think at that time, Survivor was still very much like survival. So every season they were really trying to push them more and more to say, like, let's make this harder. Let's make this even harder. And then once they got to Africa and realized, like, okay, we pushed it a little too far, let's try and backtrack a little bit. From listening to your podcast about Marquesas, they didn't quite backtrack enough at that point. But I think we saw more of a shift along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Away from the really, really hard stuff.
Yeah. It seems like that while the location is going to be just as punishing, I'm not sure if they realize that they are really going to key in on taking away the food that they give them, because there'll be no people stealing the beans in Survivor Marquesas. But for more on that, listen to last week's podcast of what they did to them. Let's talk about the ultimate winner of the season, Ethan. Lindsay, how did Ethan's game, of course, we just saw Ethan on the most recent season of Survivor, season 40. Happy to see that Survivor 41 was announced on the fall schedule for today. So very excited about that. Ethan, though, as the winner of Survivor Africa, how did that win age?
I think it's aged pretty well, but I think it's like the same kind of game that people don't necessarily respect as much now, or that maybe people think isn't flashy enough, and really relies on the fact that, like, he's just a nice guy and people felt good about him. Like, he was going into Final Tribal Council with people being like, I am voting for Ethan because I like him and I don't really like him. Like, it didn't seem like a lot of people were being like, his game was masterful and he made so many flashy moves. So I think he's more of one of these social players, and I think that always ages well, in the sense that, like, nobody's ever going to be like, wow, that was horrible, Ethan, what you did. But also, it might come off as boring.
Yeah. Haley, what do you think about Ethan as a winner?
I was really surprised that, for being a young man and being an athlete, that he didn't win very many challenges.
No.
I kind of just assumed that a lot of his win, and, you know, the reason he made it so far was because he won immunities. Like, why would you let a nice hottie like that make this the end? Like, obviously he's going to win. But Lindsay's right. He made it there based on the fact that people like him. And yeah, it's not flashy, but I think everyone on that season feels pretty satisfied about the winner. And I think all of us looking back, has anyone ever said, like, I don't like that Ethan guy?
Or Kim Johnson should have won?
Or even if you want to go back.
I think she won more immunities. Yeah.
She won like two immunities. But even if you want to look at Lex, I think He, again, I don't really remember at that time what people were saying about it, but I feel like he could have been a really polarizing character.
He certainly was, yes.
Yeah, I was surprised at Lex, his, for lack of a better word, entitlement to the game. Big Tom is exactly what I expected. He's a character that very much can live in that era and not so much in this era.
Yes.
But I don't think you're going down the line of cast members in Survivor Africa and being like, gosh, that Kelly Goldsmith, she should have won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he was really the most likable of this bunch.
For sure.
Easily.
For sure. I thought one of the interesting things that was said about Ethan, which I had not really ever thought about in the Survivor context, Lindsay, at the going into the final Tribal Council, I think in the jury like speak like on the way to tribal council. That they don't really do that anymore, of like the like what's on the jury's mind heading into tribal council. She talks about how Ethan is an introvert, and knowing Ethan, like I definitely think that that's the case. He's quiet, and then when you really know him, he's like really opens up, but he's not like super outgoing as a personality. And so that being with Tom and Lex really allowed his personality to flourish, because he didn't have to be the person who was like out there like making new friends. Like he sort of like had those guys who were basically like doing all like the outreach to people.
Yeah. And I think so, a couple of things about that. I think like Lex is the one making all the kind of big moves and also making people mad. So he's kind of taking all the bullets from that perspective. And then Big Tom, everybody loves him. But also, I'm sure when you have someone who's like that all the time, when you're starving and tired, like probably you don't want that 100% of the time. And that probably does get kind of annoying. So when you have someone who's just like low key and nice and isn't making all these big wild moves, I think probably that's a really steady presence that is really calming for people. And I think probably he just made really good impression on people from that perspective. And he's like in a great spot for that trifecta. Like he's going to be the one you feel the best about.
So Ethan really excelled in this situation, Haley. But then I got to thinking, like, what about if Ethan was in like a different scenarios where, you know, Big Tom and Lex come to him and ask him to be the third part of their alliance? Like, what if Ethan was in a season as a first time player and nobody comes to him as a like, hey, do you want to join our alliance? Or do you think that he's just so likable that someone will always come to him and say, Ethan, be in our alliance?
I really do think he's except in the exception of Winners at War. He's always going to make it to the merge.
Well, that was a fluky thing that happened to him.
Yes, it was. Because you're always going to want a strength like that on your team. And he's never going to do anything that's really going to upset people. So it's just nice to have that kind of like even keel personality when everything else is going haywire. I can't imagine that nobody's ever going to pick Ethan up. Mm-hmm. That's a hard scenario for me to picture.
Yeah. In the trio of Ethan and Tom and Lex, that I really saw Ethan as sort of basically like the son of these two parents who bicker a lot. And then both of them like confide in the child of like, here's what's
so
yeah, like it's a little dark. It's a little dark, but he's like, he's just like a good sounding board, and he never like rats out like one to the other.
Yeah, I listened to you and Josh in TEOS just before mm-hmm. this, and that was one of the things that Josh had said, was that probably Ethan's like greatest strength is that he's a sounding board for people, and he never repeats it. So he gets all the information, but he doesn't get any of the bad blood of like being a tattletale.
Yeah, and I wonder if he just knows his customers so well, where he knows like if he said to Big Tom, like you know the thing about Lex, like he said that you said like well hell I gotta go, and then and then Lex is gonna be in Ethan's face like did you tell Tom, like and so Ethan just like knows how to play these guys, like he does a really good job. He's no snitch, so that really did help him out. And then he also has like, you know, the good relationship with Kim Johnson throughout the entire game, as he stays with her through the swap. Haley, do you feel like that Ethan has a signature move in the season?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Like, I very much feel like he was never really leading the charge, and mm-hmm. that's really kind of what benefited him, because Lex was leading so many charges. But then he had a lot of blood on his hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lindsay, do you have one?
Yeah, my absolute favorite thing coming from him. And I will say, in this viewing, like, I've probably seen Survivor Africa like 10 times. And in this one, I had the most visceral reaction in terms of how much I hate Silas. And the moment when Ethan is like, you know what? I think maybe we should throw the challenge. I was like, God bless you, Ethan. Like, this has never been done. And you're also going to get Silas out of here. And I think that's such an awesome moment. And also, I think it's great from him, because he doesn't seem like he would ever do that. So it's like stepping out of his comfort zone to make the right move. Mm-hmm. I think that's like, it's very, very good. Plus Silas leaves.
Yeah. And it really pays dividends of that Samburu is like so dysfunctional that it really like, you know, wounds them in a way where, despite some of the things that Baran does after the merge, you know, they're never really able to come back from, like the numbers disadvantage. But that's a good segue into, you know, the season to me reaches a crescendo after the merge where we have the vote where Clarence goes out, T-Bird casts the vote against Lex. He doesn't know who was that second vote. He goes on the warpath, ultimately decides that it was Kelly Goldsmith, who it was not. It was T-Bird. It was me. And so she ultimately denies it or doesn't come out and says it. Lex is on the hunt for this vote. And Haley, we get a couple of weeks where we almost have like this historic flip in the game, which we ultimately are going to see in Marquesas.
We were so close, but they were still too tied to the idea of they had to stick with their original tribe mates. And obviously, and this was such a detriment to Kelly and Kelly's game because she didn't like Lex. She didn't owe Lex anything. So why did she stick with that side when she could have got him out?
Well, ultimately, she did flip over, but then
but not soon enough.
But Lex brought over Brandon.
Mm-hmm. I do love that moment from Kelly because I feel like before that, we don't really have any of these like young women archetypes who are willing to make that move. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Kelly hears from Lex that he's probably going to vote for her, she's like, oh, okay, fine. You know what? I'm leaving. And she like hops right over to Kim. And I think that's awesome because we've never seen that before up to now.
Yeah, I was very surprised that Kelly Goldsmith, that in the real time in the reunion, talks about how that, you know, she studied how women are depicted on television and she kind of wanted to go out and really play the game. She didn't want to be sort of like the Elizabeth or Amber or Colleen, and she like went out there to really play.
Yeah, ahead of her time.
She was ahead of her time. Yeah, and that's another really good talking with T-Bird that we did with Kelly Goldsmith. That was from like one of the I think that might have been like one of the first five or six talking with T-Birds that we ever did was with Kelly Goldsmith. A lot of good ones from Survivor Africa, including Frank, Brandon, Lindsay, and Lex, and now Clarence coming up this week. So. Lots of great T-Bird episodes to mine there, but it's such an exciting couple of episodes where you have everything that's going on with Lex on the hunt for these votes and Haley. We just had never seen anything else like that in Survivor history at that point.
No, it was shocking to me. And it's not something we really see that often anymore either, like that absolute witch hunt. Because you're going into the game of Survivor, and sure, if you get a vote, it's a little upsetting, but you have to understand that's a part of the game where it felt like Lex was like, why did you put that vote? Like, why did I get voted for it? Like, you can't vote for me. It's like, you can vote for anyone who doesn't have the necklace on.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Lex think that he could escape all the votes? Like, why did he think he got a track right to the end? Because
mm-hmm.
he worked harder than everyone else, because he made all decisions, because he was winning the most. I don't know, maybe, but it just, I was pretty surprised at that. I was a little shooketh, as one would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lex is such an interesting character here in this season. And Lindsay, this comes, you know, I'm only about, I think, maybe 2 or 3 weeks away from that. I've just watched Survivor All-Stars. And I guess I've never done the sort of like reverse order of All-Stars first, followed by Survivor Africa. So that was like a very interesting way to follow the journey of Lex Vandenberg.
Yeah, and I think like we see interesting parallels between the two where he's going to have that same thing all the way through Africa where he's like, oh, I have to tell the person before I vote them out. It's the noble thing to do. And I love from Kelly where she's like, oh, so you can lie to him the whole way through, but then if you tell him, like, repent your sins on your deathbed, like, now you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's interesting that we see that here, and then we're going to see it again in Africa, and it just completely screws him over. But he's very lucky that these things don't backfire on him and get him voted out sooner.
Yeah. Haley, Lex has, I feel like, such an interesting, like, moral code. And he's so, like, dug in, like, ethically into, like, what is right and what is wrong in the game.
It's really interesting. And I like, you know, for all his faults, I like Lex. I can't help it. Like, I don't agree with him all the time. I wouldn't do the things that he does some of the times, but I like that he really is trying to do the right thing in a game where that's not necessary all the time.
Yeah. Lindsay, he's so serious throughout much of this game.
Yeah, and so aggressive. Like, he's always trying to cut people's throats and, like, he's going to kill people. It's a very visceral language.
At least he didn't threaten to pull a shotgun like our good friend Big Tom did.
Yeah, tough look for my guy Tom on that one.
Yeah, certainly, like, of everybody, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, with Clarence when we talk to him later on this week. But yeah, they were very upset about the Beangate, which really started the season off.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of things Tom said on this watch really bummed me out, because when I first watched Survivor Africa back in 2001, I remember loving Tom. And then every time I've watched it since then, I've been like, that Tom, hilarious. But then this time, I was just like,
on this rewatch about Tom? Learning was 45 on the screen.
45?
Yeah.
He looks like he's like 60 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's not the years. It's the mileage.
I guess goat farming is not easy work. It ages you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. A lot of different stuff that we just scratched the surface of between the Beans, Tom, everything we're talking about with Lex. Yeah. Tom as a character also, you know, he still is going to have like his one-liners that hit. But a lot of the things that he says here are, you know, did not age great over the course of these last 19 years, is it?
20, yeah.
This fall it'll be 20 years for Survivor Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, like, even in the moment, Kim Powers pointed a couple times, like, oh, Tommy's not the most politically correct. And it's like, even then. So here we are 20 years later.
Or Kim Johnson at the end being like, just straight up, this is the first time we heard it throughout the season. Tom hates women. He's not voting for me. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim Johnson did seem to have some disdain for Big Tom by the end of the season. Like, she was the one person who was like, I've put up with this for 39 days. This is quite enough. Like, it's funny in small doses, but I have been through this for the entire season, and I'm ready to move on.
Yeah. And even Tom, when he votes for Ethan, he's like, he's not saying why he's voting for Ethan. He's just being like, Kim, you shushed me too much and I'm mad. He's just, goes on a big thing about how she was mean to him the whole time or something.
It was uncomfy. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that they are like a, oil and water in terms of like personality types of that. He is just like basically like, a clown and is just like saying all sorts of things just to try to get a laugh out of people. And Kim Johnson strikes us as like a pretty serious, educated person who does not have sort of like a town drunk in her life.
Yeah,
like a serious person. Yeah, so that you see there's a lot of Big Tom on display, the good and the bad and everything in between here in Survivor Africa. We'll be right back to talk more about Survivor Africa. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Hyundai, where they question everything to create the best Tucson ever. Like, does a Survivor season with no theme still have a theme? Is no theme a theme? Every inch of the new Tucson has been completely reimagined, resulting in an SUV loaded with available innovations both inside and out. They're reinventing the way the game is played. From design to technology to safety, every aspect of the new Tucson has been improved upon. The SUV has been completely redesigned inside and out to create that best Tucson ever, with loads of new technological advancements, like a digital key that allows you to use your phone as a spare key. Plus, there are all new user profiles and a 10.25-inch full-touch infotainment screen, plus LED daytime running lights, which are stylishly hidden within the front grille, making them invisible when not in use. And if you're driving around with little ones like me, the Hyundai Tucson has all sorts of safety innovations that every family is looking for. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Tucson over at Hyundai.com. Learn more at Hyundai.com. Now let's get back to talking about Survivor Africa. I guess let's take a look back at how it all gets started as we revisit Survivor Africa. And of course, everybody gets dropped off, and we have our two very distinct tribes. The first episode is going to spend more time on the Baran tribe. And I guess since we had talked about everything with Clarence, let's revisit that, because I think that is definitely still a upsetting thing to watch. I mean, I think as it was 20 years ago of this incident, which ultimately is going to take place, we have Diane, who is the postal mail carrier. We did call her one time on, it wasn't on a Talking with T-Bird, but it was on a T-Bird podcast. And we just called up Diane. And she is not doing so great. And so at the end of, is this post the loss in the immunity challenge?
Directly following the loss in the immunity challenge. Yeah.
Everybody goes to the water hole, and while they're at the water hole, Clarence is taking care of Diane. And so Clarence, I guess had also earlier committed the cardinal sin of he ate two cherries.
Did they prove that, though? That feels hearsay to me, and I'm no lawyer, but I don't think hearsay is admissible in court.
They do show him eating two in a row, but in his quarantine questionnaire, he says, like, there was a whole can of them. A bunch of people took more than one.
I don't know if I buy that one. I think the bean thing happened after, and then they were like, well, maybe he took some more cherries too. I think he made the right choice in the time opening the can of beans for Diane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he made the right choice in the time of eating the beans.
Mm-hmm.
But can you blame him? That dude is huge. He's burning more calories than anyone else. He's opening a can of beans, and he's like, I get why he took the scoop. But the thing is, I think they were too hard on him. They could have just been like, that's not cool. We're not doing that as a tribe. But they didn't let it go. And they just railed on him. They railed on this poor guy instead of just being like, hey, not cool.
Yeah.
But he repented. He was like, I totally understand where you guys are coming from. I messed up. You're right. I'm not going to do that again. I was just trying. And then Diane.
Yeah.
To be like, well, I didn't ask for the beans. Like, no, Diane, you didn't ask for the beans. You were passed out. Of course you didn't ask for the beans.
You also did not eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Diane. I was so mad at Diane. I was so mad at her.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, well, I didn't ask you to open the beans.
Yeah.
You're painting me to be a liar.
It feels like this is like what makes Ethan so out to get Clarence for the rest of the pre-merge. Like the entire time he's just like, don't really like Clarence. Even though Clarence, like after this moment, seems to be entirely loyal to that group. Like we don't see anything to suggest otherwise. It seems like they just hold on to this forever.
He lasted so much longer than I thought he did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he is going to bounce back from this like in a major way and he's a big part of the entire pre-merge. And so that part is really great that Clarence stays around, because he's so funny all through his time on the show.
Oh, my. What a great character. It just sucks how he was portrayed and how that's his legacy. I think anyone who watched Survivor in those early seasons remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it sucks. It sucks that he got played so dirty like that. For one little mistake that got blown up by people who have skewed ideals of what maybe is important out there. I don't think it's unfair to think that Clarence being a young black man had something to play in the perceptions of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it would have been very interesting to see what would the reactions have been. I don't even want to say that Ethan would have done it, but like, had Silas been on that tribe and Silas opened the can of beans, like, would the reaction have been as severe if it wasn't Clarence?
Yeah. And like, I think Haley, that's super fair to say. Like, I think even, especially with some of the stuff Tom says, there's definitely some really coded stuff in there that's like not explicitly.
Really upsetting language that was used that, you know, I didn't pick up when I was 10 years old, that now at almost 30 is making a huge impact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just doesn't land the same way.
Yeah. And really looking forward to getting the chance to talk more with Clarence about this on Talking with T-Bird coming up this week, because
he did a quarantine questionnaire with Dalton, and I read it and I thought it was, he has a very light perspective of everything, yes. Which I think if he came out of it really upset about it, that's completely valid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things he said in there was like, one of the things that he is most upset about is that like now he has kids who are old enough to have like their friends commenting on like, oh, your dad's a bean stealer. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, that sucks. Like, what a bummer that is, that that's your legacy, because this is just how you're portrayed. That's the only thing you're remembered for. Like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a great character, and I hope that people remember him for a lot more than just that. That it was such a big moment at the time where I even remember like watching this in the real time coming away like, boy, that was really intense.
I remember being scandalized. I did think it was totally unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very like a very strong reaction to what happened. Is also like he said, she said, did Diane really tell him to open the can of beans or not?
Doesn't matter if she did. She obviously needed sustenance of some sort. The dude's a basketball coach. He knows if when people are struggling, like, hey, you need fluids, you need, you know, you need to be replenished. Like, I'm sure he's seen his like athletes go down because they're not, like, they don't have enough liquid or electrolytes or whatever. He's just trying to help her out. He didn't resist spooning beans into his mouth. Can you blame him? Have I been to the cupboard 5 billion times for a chip? Yes. Yes, I have. Would I have eaten the beans? Probably. I would have thought about it in that moment. You're just hungry.
Exactly. Who among us hasn't?
So ultimately, that despite the talk of the bean gate, Diane is going to be the first person who gets voted out of the Baran tribe. And then they're also going to go back to a second tribal council and vote out Jesse. Lindsay, you have any thoughts on Jesse?
My only thoughts about Jesse are, I guess I have two thoughts. One is that I hate that they show her throwing up. It's really gross. But the other thought is that I feel like there's this weird legacy about Jesse where people are like, what could have been? She could have been a star.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think we really see that. Like, I'm not sure why people were so enamored with the idea of what could have been with Jesse. Like, I don't really feel like
very
we saw
popular contestant.
Extremely popular
To the point where I mean I think she's like maintained a presence in the Survivor community. I don't know her personally, but I saw that she was interacting with the Rob is a Podcast Twitter account today.
Oh, cool. Like, do you remember hearing that, everybody being like, oh my god, she could have been a star, she would have been so good if mm-hmm. she had another chance?
Well, I had her in my office poll,
right?
Nobody was pulling harder for Jesse Camacho than me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Haley, were you a big Jesse Camacho person?
She's someone I really remembered, but I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was her dire need of chapstick. I felt so bad.
She should have been on Samburu. That was Brandon's luxury item.
So smart.
Yeah.
I love the old school luxury items. Like, chapstick? A hacky sack?
Sure. Why not? Why not? Yeah, and Jesse, that she doesn't want to drink the water. Seemingly, that's the issue.
Yeah, she says it's like tar.
Her?
Well, the water situation, I think, is worse here in Survivor Africa than it is for any other group of contestants in the history of the show.
Mm-hmm. Quick cue. Did they have the right watering hole?
You think that there was a different one? Maybe there was a map?
It felt like maybe there was a map issue. And the other tribe's watering hole was so much better.
So the big difference that I saw, and that I think what Tom pointed out, like when they do the flip, is that like Tom takes a shovel and is like digging out a space to make the water less like in the mud. And then when he gets to St. Brew, he's like, oh my God, they've just been like drinking out of the mud. This is disgusting. And then he kind of like digs it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Then.
Who do you think has the wrong one, Baran or Samburu?
Samburu, right? Like they were the ones that it was kind of just like a stream.
Yeah, I don't think they did the work. I don't know if that was part of their survival training, if they did that for a couple of days. Like when we were in the Amazon, we had like 3 or 4 days of survival training that we did, where they showed us like what to do. Not that I was paying that close of attention, but it seemed like that, or maybe just Tom as a farmer knows what to do. Lindsay seems like she knows what to do also. So
are you talking about me or Lindsay Richter?
You.
Okay, good. I feel like if you see that and you're like, oh, yeah, this is just like a layer of like scum, you're probably going to try to
Lindsay Richter did not in any way seem like she knew what to do.
Yeah, no, she was terrible.
Mm-hmm. But she's an athlete, guys.
She's an athlete.
Did anyone hear?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So let's talk about Samburu, because I do think that they have a lot more of the intrigue in the pre-merge, because they are really such a fractured group. And we hadn't really seen this too much in Survivor history outside of Ogacore a little bit of leading up to Mitchell getting voted out, and then Colby, you know, ultimately siding with the Keith and Tina side of things. But here we have, in our 8-person tribe for the first time, 4 older people and 4 younger people here, and they are not on the same page. Haley, what do you make of this first generational divide on Survivor?
Rob, it made me cry laughing. When they're like, these Gen X kids, they don't do anything. They're so lazy. They're so this. It's like,
yeah,
this feels too real and familiar. So here's my thing. I think maybe baby boomers just hate everyone.
Yeah.
But it was unfortunate. There was no kumbaya warmness here. It was all harsh and... Oh, and there was some strong finales here. They put Brandon and Frank on the same tribe on purpose for maximum drama.
Yeah, that was definitely done on purpose. that this was the time in Survivor where it's like, oh, you really won't like this person. Okay, let's match you two up on that tribe. But let's talk about the Samburu tribe a little bit more in closer detail. And of course, we have our 4 younger players. Why don't we go with the aforementioned Brandon here, who does get a lot of airtime, Lindsay.
Yeah, I always actually kind of liked Brandon, and I remember thinking like he's pretty cranky and like pretty snarky with a lot of the people, but I remember finding him fairly entertaining. And I also like don't necessarily disagree with what he does, where he's like, I would rather get voted out than be seen to be aligning with Frank. And I think like obviously from a game perspective, that's not great, but like he's hanging out with someone who hates him fundamentally for who he is. And like, I can kind of understand why you would not want to have people see you aligning with that. Like, I get it.
Yeah, it's interesting in this season where it's not just like game for people of like, what do I do to advance? Like, there are like a lot of like real life factors that enter into the decision making for a lot of the different contestants over this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Brandon in particular, I just like he does have some pretty good confessionals, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is, very funny throughout the season. Of course, that he is with Kim Powers, who Haley, I feel like the Kim Powers is pretty underserved here in this season for somebody who ultimately is going to come in sixth.
I would absolutely agree. I almost knew nothing about Kim Powers except that she is married to one of your cast members. Yes,
and she almost married somebody else.
I wanted to know so much more about that.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know why she left the suit at the altar.
Was it at the altar, or did she just cancel the wedding?
I think she just canceled the wedding. But it's more fun and dramatic to say she left him at the altar.
Agreed.
It was three weeks before the wedding, according to her bio.
That's pretty close to the altar.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of deposits are paid by that point.
Yes.
True.
Yes. Yeah, she doesn't get a lot here in this season, you know. And then at the final tribal council, Lindsay, she gets like the big like swelling music of asking the Kim Johnson the question of who did she learn the most from?
Yeah, and then Kim's like, I learned the most from you, and she's like, oh, stop. Like, yeah,
they're
really making a moment of it
now. And the thing is, it was opposite for Brandon, who was like, who would you take there? And Ethan was like. You and he's like, I was gonna vote for you, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kim says the same thing, like, she was planning to vote for Ethan, and then she's like, I don't know what it was about Kim's answer that made me change my mind.
Yeah, Kim got a couple votes out of spite, which I'm here for.
Yeah. So then also you have Lindsay, who does get a lot of the airtime in the pre-merge. Haley, you seem like you had a strong reaction to Lindsay.
I had no recollection of Lindsay whatsoever. Yet she's such a character in this first half.
Yeah.
She's brash. She's like not what I feel like a lot of Survivor characters were at this point. I have a soft place in my heart for Lindsay. She was young. She made a lot of mistakes. Who amongst us has not?
Yeah.
I don't know. She was something. She was something else. And I do feel bad because, again, reading her quarantine questionnaire, it seemed like she had a really hard time after the show.
Yeah.
It affected her greatly. She never watched a single other episode of Survivor after it.
She did have a really hard time. This was another Talking with T-Bird interview that we did where she like felt like that. She was like, she was really disappointed with her own performance in the show, and she felt like she came off as very immature on the show, and she's really like done a lot of work, I think, on herself since then.
I think what is really interesting about this cast is they were all able to look at it and say, sure, I didn't always look great, but I said those things. Like, that's not the editing magic. That's not whatever. It's like, that was me, and I don't feel good about what it was, and you know, we fix it, we move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Lindsay is gonna have a lot to do here in the first half of the game. And then of course Silas, Lindsay's least favorite contestant.
He's just such a douche. Like, he's got that smile the whole time. He's got this like smarmy grin. And he, like, I was really connecting with Linda when she was like, what is this thing where he takes a knee? And he did that. I was just like, are you serious? Like, how do you not see that you look ridiculous? Like, oh my God, it made me so furious. He's just the worst. He's like the worst kind of person where he's so condescending and he's got that stupid smile. And he's like, no, no, I totally understand why you voted for me. I just, you know, like, if that's what you want to do, it's totally fine. I just like, you know, can you tell me the logic? And like, oh, he makes me so angry.
Yeah.
I was furious.
So I think that he's also the youngest member of Samburu. So
taking a knee. That's bold.
Yeah. So I'm sure, especially to like the 46 year old Carls and the 42 year old Franks and T-Bird and Linda, like, this isn't like sitting great with them.
And they're all standing around him, so it just looks ridiculous. It's not like they all kneel like, yes, tell us, Silas, give us your wisdom.
Yeah.
They're all just like, who is this guy?
But he's a very interesting power player in that it is seemingly the four older people, the tribe elders, as T-Bird said they prefer to be called, that they, you know, very quickly have a foursome. And I think they realize, okay, well, we need five. Five is the magic number here for if we go to the merge. We need five. And so they want Silas to be their five. And they approach him, and he sort of like strings them along for a little bit before ultimately deciding to go all in with the younger group.
Yeah, inexplicably. Like, mm-hmm. It's very strange.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I think he feels like he would rather be like their leader than sort of like number five for the older crew. And there's this thought for like there's a battle for the supremacy of Samburu where Haley, like one side is going to win out and the others are just going to sort of like fold in line. But the tribe is so fractured that that does not work out that way.
No, it certainly did not work out. I think the elders took a hard turn when Carl got voted out based on his no knowledge of trivia.
Yeah, Carl did struggle in the tiebreaker. Ultimately, the question about the tick was his undoing.
Poetry, that's yes. The deciding one that keeps Lindsay in the game.
Yes.
Also, a struggle to be memorable. Carl, every time I'm like. Carl?
Carl the dentist.
The Porsche guy.
Yeah. That he has some nice cars. Dr. Carl, Lindsay, is he not memorable for you?
I mean, he's not super memorable. He's probably pretty far down the list of people. I think when I was filling out the little questionnaire, I think he's who I picked in terms of like least memorable person. Mm-hmm. But like he also kind of digs himself a hole where it's like basically like the original Bait Blake where Silas is like, what kind of car do you have? Mm-hmm. And then he goes, is it a Mercedes? And then Carl stupidly goes, I have one of those.
I got mm-hmm. one Porsche. Yes. I've got one Mercedes. Yeah. I've got one big one. I've got one of those ones with two doors, but costs a lot of money.
Yeah. If you just say yes, then people are like, oh, he has a Mercedes. It's a pretty nice car. When you say I have one of those, it's like, and also I have several more. Like you're mm-hmm. really walking into a hole here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Carl doesn't want to talk about his cars, but Carl also really wants really to talk does. About this his
was,
cars.
This was Carl's face when he was talking about his cars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And somehow less of a douchey smile than Silas.
Yeah. Carl, I guess that this came up in the reunion show that he just really wanted to go to Africa, right? That I think Brian
Dude's
Gumbel,
rich, just go to Africa. Yeah, sell your
gone.
Mercedes.
Just
go and have water and food and it'll be awesome. It'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian Gumbel asked him if he would have gone if it was a different place. And he said, no, only Africa.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have gone to Chile. I've been there before.
So boring. Mm-hmm. So pedestrian.
Very boring.
At this point, I'd go to Manitoba, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Been locked in my room for so long.
Yeah.
Sorry, Manitoba. I'm sure you're great.
Yeah, probably. Haley and I were in very much the same situation.
Mm-hmm. We're just 8 weeks into our third lockdown. We're doing it.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
Celebrating with a 4-hour Africa podcast. Mm-hmm. And nowhere else to be, Rob.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm happy to have you here. I'm glad.
Do we cry on this podcast?
There's
due to
crying.
Something not Survivor Africa related?
Sure. Sure.
Great chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the first person we've spoken to outside of our homes.
I'm like getting mad that I have to talk about an Ethan because all I've done is talk to an Ethan for 14 months straight.
I don't have any way to get back to the podcast.
And I've derailed the show. I've done my job. I can just head on out now.
Yeah, Haley just really wanted to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Dreams really do come true, folks.
Another member of the Samburu Alliance that is a little underserved here. We get a lot of Frank and T-Bird and much less of Carl and Linda. And, you know, I always thought that Linda, like, oh, here's another, like, kooky character in the history of Survivor. But, you know, I feel like that the thing that was the most illuminating to me about Linda was I happened to watch the clip show this time.
Yeah.
I haven't really watched the clip shows throughout this. This was, like, the first time I was, like, a little ahead on my rewatch. I said, oh, sure, let it run. Let's do it. Closer look. Survivor Africa. And I thought that Linda actually had some good moments in the clip show, including after her famous scene where she, I mean, she has like two like famous scenes in the season. One where she like chugs the blood and then sticks her tongue out. And then two, when she's like going up to all of the younger people like, thank you. Thank you. And then she says to Lindsay, like, what's the matter? Like, didn't your mother ever hug you when you were younger? And then it's like, wow, this this woman is unhinged. This is she's out of control. But then in the closer look, they showed like a minute after that, and Lindsay and is talking to Linda. And Linda's like, you know, I just really want to apologize on that. I you know, I was actually just really out of line right there. Like, yeah. I shouldn't have brought your parents into that. You know, my bad. Totally. Like, I was like, oh, this like completely changes like this 20-year opinion I had about this woman.
Yeah. And so it's funny because like I, again, have seen this so many times, but I was thinking that was in the original thing because I remembered Lindsay being so upset and being like, never bring my family into this and being really mad about that. And so I hadn't realized it was in the closer look thing. And one of the things I really took away from it is like Linda's apology is so genuine and so kind. She's like, I messed up. That was really uncalled for. Yeah. I'm really sorry that I did that. And she gives this like very wholehearted apology where she's like, please forgive me. And I was like, well, that's like a way better look. They are completely did her dirty by being like, look at this woman, and isn't she off the chain, like look at her. Yeah, I don't know, so I really like that that's in there, but I feel like nobody knows about that part of it. They're just like, this is this woman who is just completely unhinged.
Yeah. I'm sure I watched, I can't imagine that I missed it in the original, but it certainly was not something that I came across in the evolution of strategy. I just happened to put it on this week, but yeah, really like changed my opinion of Linda.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very interesting. It's such a nice apology. And then ultimately we have you know, of course, we all know T-Bird, who is in all of her glory in this season,
even more of a star than I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought maybe T-Bird kind of got the RJP thumb in everyone's memories just from like
we brought
present.
Her down.
She's fabulous. Like, she is an absolute star.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely devastating that she was not on All-Stars. Totally heartbroken. She missed out on second chances.
Yeah, even worse that you people didn't vote her in.
Oh, don't blame me, Robert. I voted for her. Mm-hmm. I listened to your podcast with her. I sent in my little votes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even podcasted with you at some point
mm-hmm.
about everyone who's going in that boat, maybe. Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar. I don't know.
Sounds familiar. Yeah. Yeah, it is a sin that they didn't get to send T-Bird back.
Like, I'm getting worked up again. Maybe it's the temperature in this room, but I'm getting worked up for about the seventh time this podcast.
About T-Bird not playing again?
Just various topics I'm getting worked up about. This one is just really getting the temperature.
Okay, we'll talk more about everything that T-Bird brings to the table here in the season. But she's so much fun to have there. And then, of course, the other member of Simbaru is Frank, who Lindsay, he's rough around the edges, but I mean, he is a character.
Frank seems like an all-time tough hang. Like, someone just like, oh my God. He's like, I've never broken the honor of a handshake. And also the NRA, they're pretty great, right? Like, oh, what is brunch? Do you eat that? Like, what are you talking about with this guy?
Why did he agree to this?
Yeah, right? Oh my God.
You know, none of the physical stuff was hard. It was having to talk to people every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the animals are fine. But yeah, not the people.
I could tell you that we did the talking with T-Bird with Frank, and that he had no interest in Survivor, but his whole thing was that from when he was a young boy, that he had books about, and he kept pronouncing it Africa. It was his lifelong dream to go to Africa and to be in the African, I want to call it the jungle. It's not a jungle. What would you call it?
The savannah.
Yeah. And he wanted to be out there. And then I think when they saw that they were going to film a Survivor season, and they would do that at the time where, you know, they would tell you where, well, now I guess they do tell you where the Survivor season is going to be before you apply to be on the show. But they used to like, hey, the next season, Australia, come on, you want to be one of the survivors to go to Australia? And people would make videos like dressed as a kangaroo. And then, okay, this next one is going to be in Africa. So apply now so you could be on Survivor Africa. And so ultimately that he really wanted to go to Africa.
See, I'm really shocked that you, and I'm going to reveal that I haven't listened to every single podcast, Rob, but I am shocked to learn that there is a Talking with T-Bird with Frank. I must have missed that one because I remember hearing you say in TEOS, you were like, oh, you one time called Frank.
Yes.
And he was like, lose my number.
Yes, well, it was, but this was T-Bird calling him.
Right, true. She has the validity that you did not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and T-Bird and Frank, you know, famously had like the great
best
relationship.
Friends.
Yeah. And I think I compared them at the time that we did that, not on the podcast, but just anecdotally, that they're basically like the like Leslie Knope and Ron Swanson of real life.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Mm-hmm. Like he's very gruff,
wow,
demeanor, no nonsense. And she's just like all like, you know, sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, that's like the perfect analogy, too. Like when they ask Frank, like, what branch of the military were you in? And he's like, fought for America, freedom, the America branch. Like, that's
yeah,
a very Ron Swanson line.
Yeah, I mean, that, he's like as close as you get to Ron Swanson on Survivor.
That's beautiful. Well done, Rob.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the Samburu tribe. You know, we mentioned Linda and her big moment. We get the gross food challenge here in the second episode. Pretty standard stuff here in these first couple seasons of Survivor. Survivor's drinking the blood. Haley, you are a connoisseur of food and spirits and, of course, podcasts on the Top Chef Roundtable. How did the drinking the goat's blood challenge hold up?
I think Jessica made some great points last week,
yes,
in which she mentioned that the othering of the food is a hard thing to look at now. But I think the contestants were pretty respectful of this.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were like, ew, this is nasty. It was all very much like, it didn't really seem like anyone complained about it. They all were just like, thank you very much. Like, mm-hmm, I'm so happy that you're sharing this with us and we, mm-hmm, are going to respect you by consuming this that you gave to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never thought that this would be like a such a difficult thing to do, like compared to like eating like the gross stuff. Like I just like always felt like that. Okay. Like this is not something I would do normally, but I feel like it's doable.
I would not like to be signed up for it, but if I had to be signed up for it, possibly. I just in general have a weak stomach.
Mm hmm. Okay, I'll write that down for if we ever have our gross food challenge. At the
weak stomach and a weak knee, so please just leave me out of those challenges.
At RHAP field day.
Oh my God, no.
Haley up for the tiebreaker.
Yeah. All right,
yeah, well, Allie on her RHAP takeover, like, answered who'd be best at Hall Brawl.
Yes.
Obviously, I was left out of that top 15 people she wrote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No hall brawl for me, please.
I don't even want to like a living room brawl.
Nowhere. No brawl.
No brawls.
Nope.
Don't even really want to get up.
No brawls. So,
oh, we're having a great time.
Ultimately, the Kelly Goldsmith is not going to be able to beat out Linda. That leads to the Jesse vote off. But we're going to have some big moments that happen in the third episode of the season. Of course, this is when we really get things culminating to a head of the generation war between the Gen Xers and the tribe elders. And we're gonna see the reward. I think is this where we get the reward challenge for the water, or is that the next episode?
This is the water one.
Yeah, because I think that Lindsay, in hindsight, I really feel like that Baron winning the 120 gallons of water and also immunity in one challenge really, I think, changes the tide of the season.
100%. I think that big thing of clean water where you don't have to be literally drinking elephant dung.
Yeah.
It's like a huge game changer. And like that was probably taking forever. It was super hot and it's really gross. And probably you were feeling sick. And like in the previous episode, Jesse couldn't even get it down. So it's like just having that is probably such a game changer for them.
Yeah. I mean, Haley, like there's probably like no bigger reward that changes the living of the, I mean, other than maybe like, and this might be even more impactful than sort of like the Survivor Fiji of the haves and the have nots of one tribe is getting clean water and the other tribe isn't.
Can I tell you my dumb, dumb moment of watching this?
What is it?
Near the end of the season, Ethan, my current husband, and I were so shocked at how this water was lasting for so long. We're like, they're not finished it by now? Like, it's a lot of water, but it's not that much water, and all of them are drinking all day. Until we realized that at the end, they were boiling the water and covering it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, this water's lasting five ever. Like, how cool.
Mm-hmm. Really, yeah,
they just
well.
Refilled the tub. Yeah.
Yeah. So the survivors were refilling the water with the well water.
Yeah, they're dumping their hot water there because at one point you could see it was very cloudy.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's a dumb thing. I didn't even realize that they were doing that. I thought you were going to say like Jeff says that each of you could drink a gallon a day until the merge. I'm like, oh, maybe they just didn't drink that much.
First of all, I'm Canadian. I don't know what a gallon is. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I can't do math to save my life.
Yeah. Boy,
I will not be doing that math problem.
Let's see. What would a gallon be? Probably like 3 liters.
I did hear there was some gas shortage problems in the United States because people were like super unthrilled that gas was like $3.95 a gallon or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it worked out to be like $1.05 a liter or something. Lindsay, can you imagine playing $1.05 a liter?
That'd be such a steal.
That's a dream.
3.7 liters to a gallon.
That's pretty close. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Okay.
That also sounds like a lot of water to drink in a day. I don't know. But
I guess it's
hot.
It's you're hot.
This, my good friend, is 900 milliliters, which is almost a liter.
You drinking three of those in a day? Four of those in a day?
I'm trying, okay.
Oh my god, that's too much water.
So
I'm always thirsty.
Okay.
All right. We'll leave that alone. Okay. So but this third episode of the season, I'm sorry. So that we have the Boulder Challenge is what this is going to be for. Kim Johnson is going to I'm getting confused between all my pre-merge challenges.
All the times that Kim messes up.
She gets rolled over here.
Mixed up with all the Kims.
She gets rolled over, but it does not stop the Baron tribe. Simburu is like, they're rolling the ball off the course.
Jeff's like, you have to go through the flags. Yeah, that's a very intense challenge. Very epic, I think, with that giant boulder. It seems a little dangerous, though.
Yeah, I mean, it seems super dangerous. Haley, I feel like that we've done other stuff with the boulder, but nothing else like this.
Yeah, this is tough. Again, I don't want to be committed to doing this challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so big reward there, and then ultimately we're going to see the SOS challenge here in the same episode. And Lindsay, Simburu is sort of like half-assing it now at this point, where it seems like that both sides want to go to tribal council, like
Kim Johnson, who was full-assing it.
Oh, amazing.
It was right there.
Clever.
Yeah.
Well done, Haley. Yes. Okay. I think my initial thought was like the way I remembered this was like, oh, Baron wins because they had all those paints and that totally won it for them. But then when you actually look at it, like Zamboros was just terrible. Like it was, they put it right in there. Like it, they show the aerial shot where you're looking down, you're like, yeah, no, that the drop master or whatever is totally right. Like you can't distinguish it from anything around it. Like,
yeah.
They did a really, really bad job with this.
It seemed like that Lindsay was working all by herself on this one.
Yeah, and I also don't understand, like, it shows her right before she passes out where she, it looks like she's trying to, like, kick down a tree or something. Like, I feel like there must have been more accessible wood to get for their purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. They struggle with, they say there is no firewood, basically, before Lex and Big Tom come, and then Lex and Big Tom find a bunch, so yeah, maybe,
like
Lindsay,
a huge pile.
Maybe Lindsay did not know where to go. But ultimately, we're going to see Baron is also going to win their first immunity. So big bounce back episode for Baron after having some struggles in the first two episodes. I thought this was a interesting discussion, and this will come up more at the second vote, where the men of the Baron tribe are seemingly better performers, whereas the women of Samburu are better than the women of Baron. And it's probably also have to do with Jesse going down in her vitality so quickly. But it really comes down to like the Samburu has the more competitive women in these challenges.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Diane's dying in the first challenge. Jesse's throwing up in the second challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, Kim's terrible the whole way through. Like, really, only Kelly is even competitive.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard that Kim Johnson is old? Because that was a major sticking point throughout the season. Like,
yeah,
Kim,
she's like 56.
Kim's on her deathbed. She's 56. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 foot in the grave.
But it's such a arc for her where she's the person who is like holding them back in all the challenges, and then she comes back and ultimately, well, you know, she wins the question immunity at the final four, but then also somehow outlasts Lex and Ethan to win the final immunity challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah,
thinking about being baking in the sun with a planter's punch. Haley, what's in a planter's punch?
A handful of peanuts and some vodka.
Is it peanut vodka?
Oh, don't say one of you would know. I did wonder.
I'm gonna look that up. Give me a sec while I do a goog.
Yeah, I will say Planter's Punch does sound like a really old timey cocktail.
It sounds delicioso. Mm-hmm. First of all,
yeah,
3 ounces. Oh boy, 3 ounces of dark rum. We legally can't serve something like this here in Canada. 1 ounce of simple syrup, 3/4 ounce of lime juice, freshly squeezed.
Yeah.
1 teaspoon of grenadine. You're going to need a big glass for this too. 3 dashes of Angostura bitters, 1 splash of soda water, and garnish with a mint sprig.
Yeah.
Sounds lovely.
I do think Big Tom had 7 of those at the reward, the hot air balloon before breakfast.
A little more than 3 ounces.
So the accoutrements. It was just the rum. Oh, I don't even know how you wake up after that.
After one planter's punch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is strong. Okay, this is a lot of alcohol, b a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm. That hangover.
Hey, Kim Johnson knows how to do it. You know, Kim Johnson is interesting in that I feel like that she played in Survivor Africa and then came in second. And I feel like that no one has ever seen or heard of her ever since. I mean, I've been around Survivor for, a few years and never heard about one. Like, I think that she went home the day of the Survivor Africa finale. And I think that does not seem to have had an interaction with one single person since then.
She took her 100K and got on out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she on Cameo, do you think?
That's worth looking into.
No, I if you told me Kim Johnson was on Cameo, I would drink a Planter's Punch. On the chug one on the podcast right now.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, I'm sure we'll get to it when we get to that Final Four challenge, but I wonder if there was, like, any bitterness over that, like, controversy over her winning that Fallen Comrades challenge. I wonder if it was like, I'm just going to take my, like, second place status and get out of here.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know, especially, like, Lex, who's, like, the mayor of Survivor, where he's just keeps in touch with everybody. And Ethan, like, I'd be curious to know if any of them keep in touch with Kim Johnson, like at all, like, in the last 20 years.
Have you asked T-Bird about it?
She might know.
I can ask T-Bird about it. Like, I don't ever have gotten a sense from T-Bird that they were especially close, but we can see if anybody keeps in touch with Kim Johnson. So, yeah, Kim Johnson is going to be big in the next episode. But we got to talk about tiebreaker. The tiebreaker happens. So Survivor in the Australian Outback is going to have a tie at the merge, where it came down to Colby and Jeff Varner. Over Jeff Varner had a previous vote from Deb. And so that was easy. You could solve that with a previous vote. But here we have our first tribal council for Samburu. And we're going to get to a deadlock tie. 4 votes for Carl, 4 votes for Lindsay. Well, how do we solve this?
Trivia!
Bush trivia!
I wish I could say I hated it more.
You liked it.
I liked it. You know what? I really liked the strategy that went into the tiebreaker being previous votes.
Yes.
I liked, you know, we'll get to it, I guess, but at a certain point in the game where they're trying to pretend like Brandon had gotten previous votes so that they put their votes on him. But actually, it was Lindsay and one of the other, Kim Johnson told Kelly, was like,
yeah.
to say that he had the previous votes. Like, I thought that was pretty brilliant strategy. Would it work 20 years later? I don't know. Probably not. But I enjoyed that relic of the game.
Yeah.
I forgot about it completely.
Yeah, you know what? I do think that it did bring a lot to the table. Lindsay, that hypothetically, if they came out and said, all right, Survivor 41, guess what? A big twist this season. We're going back to previous votes as the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I don't hate it, actually. Like, I think it's an interesting way to sort of force people to be accountable for the stuff that they did when they were in the majority. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, you can start picking people off, but maybe there will be consequences for you down the line because those other people didn't like you as much. And so I think that's like an interesting wrinkle in the game.
Lindsay, how do you think it would affect vote splits?
Like, would it make it more or less common or something?
No, I think would there be like more of like, okay, let's, we don't know who has the idol, so put 3 right. votes on this person, 3 votes on this person. Like, would you be more worried about like, hey, my ally has the idol. Okay, look, just like, trust me.
Yeah,
don't put those previous votes on. Don't put that evil on me. Actually, you wouldn't even need to do a vote split, right? I guess, or would you like I guess, like, how does the hidden immunity idol complicate a tie based on a vote split?
Well, so I think, like, they still have the opportunity to revote, so it wouldn't matter from that.
Yeah, and then, okay, so if we put 3 votes on Haley, 3 votes on Lindsay, and Haley actually played the idol, then that wouldn't matter. Then it would come down to, okay, neither of you had the idol. Who had the most previous votes?
Yeah, and I think it would just make it more contentious. Like, I feel like a lot of times people already get upset when they hear that they're going to be the person the vote is split with. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, oftentimes people are just like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, you get, I don't know, I want to say, like, Christina in One World. It's just like, oh, that's fine. I understand why you'd put the votes on me. But maybe if those votes matter, maybe you get a bit more pushback from people and they fight a little harder. I don't know.
There's still a couple of problems there with it where, like, let's say, like, you know, somebody gets voted out and, you know, you got to show, like, let's say it's like 8 votes against one person. Like, do you have to like stand there? It's like, all right, you're voted out. Like, but just for the record, I got, four more, Louis votes in here. So.
Yeah. And like a lot of the time they don't read all of them. And like you even hear Tom saying like none that I know of. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not perfect, but it did bring a lot of intrigue into this season. And so
ultimately, you know, Carl's going to go out on not knowing the question about how to deal with the tick. It's going to be wild because Lindsay is going to actually suffer from a tick bite coming up soon. So it's a good thing that they learned about this.
Yes, very, very good that she knew what to do.
Yeah. Okay. Ultimately, Carl goes home. And so now, all right, Silas and the group is ready to say, all right, let's all come together, everybody. This is where Silas is going to take a knee, bring it in, everybody. All right, we're now the Samburu Seven. Silas is our leader.
He's brutal in this scene when they first come back. He's just like, okay, so here's the thing, guys. Like, I totally get it. But like, if you ever want to go to the well, just make sure that you tell me because I really need to know that. And like, and then they're going to have that whole thing about like, yeah, he takes the knee, does all that. And then there's that thing later where he's like, you got to put all your votes on Lindsay. Like, he's just such a jerk. Hate this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lindsay is pretty peeved too, Haley. She does not like that she got four votes.
She does not. She is like the Lex of the Samburu tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not happy. And so the Samburu tribe really likes to sleep in. I feel like that you don't see this a ton on Survivor where there is like some people that like sleep in. I feel like that you hear like some people like take a lot of naps, but I feel like that it's rare on Survivor to have like a couple of people that are just like hitting the snooze alarm for hours until like don't want to get out of bed. Like it's like they're at home.
Frank does not approve of the snooze button.
Frank does. Well, I mean, Frank, but Frank, you know, that's why he doesn't like brunch. He's already eaten already.
He's eaten three meals before then. I get why you'd want to sleep the whole time because there's truly nothing else to do. But to the elder's point, like why not get up early and do your work? Well, it's still not 500 degrees at 10 a.m. and then go back to sleep.
Yeah. And also like on Survivor, like there's nothing to do. You're exhausted. Like the sun goes down. You're like goes down early because you're like on the equator. And so this, like you go to bed early. Like I don't get like you're going to sleep till like 11.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that you're just like so comfortable and you're having this like luxurious sleep mm-hmm. that you just don't want to get up in the morning.
Although, that being said, I do wonder, like, maybe it's not as late. Like, maybe they're talking about it like it's like later than we think. And like, it's actually like 5:32. And Frank is like, oh, these kids sleeping in. Come on.
Yeah, we're not getting any timestamps.
Mm-hmm. True. So yeah, we don't know exactly how long they're sleeping in.
Rob, can you write that down in your notes to ask T-Bird as well? Like, what time were they waking up?
Okay. What, how early were the mornings in Africa? Of course, we have the big confrontation between Linda and Lindsay in this episode where, you know, that the elder tribes people do not feel like they are being treated great by Silas and the group. And somehow, despite that, they won a reward, Samburu. But it didn't seem like it was that great of a reward of they got like spices until Lindsay, I watched in the bonus episode that they won like this giant ostrich egg.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw it at the very end as Kim and Ethan are going to Final Tribal Council. They kind of like zoom in on the shell that they
was that what that was?
Have.
I was like, is that the ostrich egg?
Yeah. It's
weird. See, I skipped right by the clips episode. So I saw that ostrich egg and I was like, did they steal the shell from like that one challenge with mm-hmm. the leather ties?
Yeah.
Haley, yeah,
no, they just made like the equivalent of what was it? Like a dozen eggs from this one ostrich.
Yeah. Have you ever had an ostrich egg?
I haven't. I would.
Yeah. I wonder.
I tried a quail egg, I think, but not an ostrich.
Would that be more practical in the refrigerator of the ostrich egg? It's like instead of buying a dozen eggs, I just buy one ostrich egg at Costco.
Maybe if you're making like an omelet for your entire family, mm-hmm. but if you
brunch,
are clumsy,
no,
like, yeah. If you're clumsy like me, you're literally putting all of your eggs in one basket.
So clever, Haley.
I cracked myself up.
Yeah. Can you get an ostrich?
Unintended.
Yes.
Unintended.
Can you get an ostrich egg outside of Africa? Is it like a delicacy?
Yeah, I can't imagine where you would get one.
Hmm.
They also had to basically take like a chisel to it to break into it. And then they're like, a shell is like porcelain. So be careful. You're going to like cut yourself up on this.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I don't know where we can get an ostrich one. Seems like you can buy one on Amazon, but it doesn't sound. I don't know if I would trust that.
That seems questionable.
I don't know if I would trust that.
Obtained through totally legitimate means, one ostrich. Yeah,
maybe it's like a fossilized one on Amazon. I don't think I
maybe it's
it.
One of those like fake ones you get for kids so they can practice excavating.
Yeah.
Mm, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, here's a fresh ostrich egg. $145, ready to eat. An ostrich egg is comparable to 12 to 18 chicken eggs, and it can be refrigerated for up to 2 months.
12 to 18 eggs do not cost $145. I feel like this is a bad deal.
These are ostrich eggs. So, it's wild. It's just like it's like a giant egg.
It was huge.
That, should they give a reward? All right, let's see, look at your reward.
It's one egg laying ostrich.
One egg laying ostrich. Well, do you need
Clarence wants to kill the ostrich for some ostrich meat?
Yeah, Lindsay, is it like where you need like chickens and a hen also? Do you need that?
You have a rooster around?
Yeah, do you have some sort? Again, I do not know how this works. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, my God.
It's taken me 20 years to understand how it works with the chickens. I don't know the ostrich.
No, we need to have a mated pair of ostriches here.
Yeah. Clarence would be all mad if, like, I'm eating that ostrich tomorrow. We'll see, Clarence. But if that ostrich lays an egg.
It's like a very exciting scene when it escapes and Big Tom has to capture it.
Yeah, bring more ostriches into Survivor. It's gonna be exciting. So the Samburu tribe, even though they get back together in the reward challenge, they are going to lose the immunity challenge, sadly. And ultimately, it was a save for Kim Johnson, who would have been voted out. How would the season have been different if Kim Johnson goes out here before the swap?
Would it have been different?
Well, she wouldn't be in the final two.
I know, but like...
Maybe they hang on to Clarence to have the numbers after? I don't know.
Yeah. Be interesting. What does I mean? Because those Baran guys need a fourth person to stay loyal to them. Like, I do wonder, like how things would have shaken up. And Linda would still be in the game for a little bit. I'm not sure which side she would flip to.
It might be Silas.
Yeah. Although it might end up like sort of like being. Pretty similar, where if Linda hypothetically switched to, like, you had Linda and Frank and T-Bird, and so they have three people who hate Silas, Brandon, Kim Powers, and Lindsay, and so now they are sort of like inclined to work with Baran on basically like any grouping that they end up with.
Yeah, it seems that way, right? Like, I just feel like probably Lex isn't going on that same crusade against Kelly. Like, I don't know. I think probably they just hang on to Clarence and Kelly and swing over those three.
All right. So they lose Linda. Let's talk about the big moment from the season, the big twist. And Lindsay, as a Silas hater, you must have been loving this.
This episode is glorious. I will say, at this point in my notes, it just says Silas sucks, period. So that's where I was at when I was watching this. But yeah, I think this is great how it works. Like, he's just got this beautiful arc just in this one episode where he's like, oh, yeah, might as well write the check now. Like, I got this locked up. And then by the end of it, like, they have thrown a challenge specifically to get rid of him. The fact that he got votes in the last episode doesn't even matter because Frank and T-Bird were like, no, we're just voting for you. Like, it's not a tie.
Haley, before that last tribal council that they talk about, like, hey, we've been thinking, and Frank, T-Bird, and Linda, you should all vote for Lindsay, because then she's already got four votes. So just write Lindsay's name down. Like, well, who are you voting for? Like, not important. Just don't worry about it. Just vote for Lindsay. And like, well, what's in it for us? And Mary's like, nothing. Nothing. You get nothing.
I can't believe how entitled they are, wondering what's in it for them when they could be helping out their tribe. Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That made me so mad. And then when they come back and Silas is like, oh, I get it, T-Bird. It's just for revenge. I'm like, leave Teresa alone. Like, you're the worst. Don't say this to her.
So each side picks three people and the game is about to change again. I mean, this is wild just to think about a time in Survivor where that the twist is just like not something that's invented yet.
So exciting. What a thrill. Oh, I love this. They're like, just pack up and three of you go and meet. And then Jeff is very nonchalant about this.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys just swap. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's just like,
yeah.
And they're like, and he's like,
yeah, they have a look on their faces. It's almost like, wait, is this allowed? Like, can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Can we actually switch tribes? One of the things I was noticing while watching this is that Survivor now has like simultaneously more and less ceremony, where they have less of these like dramatic moments of ritual at the end. But they also like with like you were saying, Haley, like when they have tribe swaps, it's like a big event. Whereas here, it's just like, yeah, sorry, you're on the other tribe now.
Mm-hmm. Even Jeff narrating the challenges at some point. Yeah. Did I play some light Animal Crossing while watching some of these challenges? Yes, I did.
Yeah, the challenges.
And so I didn't even like notice half of them were over because Jeff was just like, I won.
Amber, yeah.
I mean, having just watched Marquesas last week also, like, it is jarring the lack of narration from Jeff, where I feel like in Marquesas, he's like a little bit like getting there, but like, it's just not here at all. Like, you're just like watching like somebody's like just like a highlight video of like, it does not feel like that you have a good sense of the action at all.
Yeah, it just says at the bottom, Tom, like, we're on go.
Yeah, he's got to look. Oh, another go. Cool. Somebody won, I guess. Huh.
Just a bunch of stuff happens, and then you sort of like see like a shot of one, like the music swells. Like, oh, I guess it's over. That's it. And Jeff like says that the tribe won, and that's it. But here we are. All right, it is a swap, and so now we're gonna see Frank and T-Bird and Silas go and join the new Baran tribe. They're really going to be at the center of all of the action in this fifth episode as they throw a challenge to vote out Silas. I was thinking about this today, Lindsay. Could Silas, Frank, and T-Bird have voted with Clarence against Ethan or Kim Johnson?
I mean, there's no reason why technically they couldn't have done that. I'm just like, I think that's one of the things
they hate Silas so much that was not on the table.
I think they were just so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so ready to get rid of him.
Would Clarence have done that?
That's the thing. I don't think we ever see any evidence from him that he would flip. Like from that first episode.
I want to ask
him.
Clarence and T-Bird, like, you know, would you have voted with Silas against Ethan, or they just loved Ethan and Kim Johnson so much instantly? Because Clarence is like is on the bottom of Baran. Like, he should be incentivized to flip here also.
Yeah, I think Clarence just did not want to do anything else to ruffle any other feathers in his time there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a game changing move that those two people are in the final too. And so, again, like Ethan is, not super nice to Clarence during the rest of the time there. So, it'd be interesting to know what they were thinking about that, or if it was just like nobody felt like they wanted anything to do with Silas, which is also understandable, Lindsay.
Well, like, and Frank and T-Bird too, like the very first night they're like, and then can you believe this guy? He tried to tell us who to vote for, and Silas is just standing there like, ugh.
Yeah, that is very funny.
Yeah.
All right. We also have Lex and Big Tom and Kelly Goldsmith. They're going to go to the new Samburu with Brandon and Lindsay. and Kim Powers, and then it's almost sort of like all right, they're sort of like Cinderella's sisters, and it's like, oh great, we have some new old people to do work for us.
And they're even better at the work. They're more efficient.
Yes.
Greg's not here.
Yes. Okay, good. We'll be sleeping in. So yeah. Please.
I love that Lindsay's like, do you guys just lie around all day like we do? And they're just like, no. That's not what happens.
It's not at all.
They really thought Kelly was going to be on their side.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Is this where we're going to have the goat challenge?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like that nowadays, Lindsay, we're not going to see as much roughhousing with goats.
Yeah, no, I think we're getting a lot of complaints when you see people like holding the goats, like with their legs sticking straight up and like throwing them around. I just think that's not going to play well.
Yeah, that's not ideal. Yeah, we watched Vanuatu a couple of weeks ago. Also, they had a challenge having to deal with the pigs. So yeah, we get a lot of animal stuff going on in these single digit seasons of Survivor.
Yeah.
So, three chickens and a hen for the new Baran tribe. More on that comes in the next episode.
They may attract predators.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's wild, Lindsay, right? That Jeff says, okay, well, you have a decision to make. You could, of course, let them live. They may lay eggs. But the downside is they may attract more predators to your camp.
They may attract predators to the camp that is already surrounded by lions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your choice.
Yeah.
And Haley, they're really all in on the eggs.
Yeah, they were really betting on those eggs. I feel like they could have gotten one chicken early on.
Yeah. Do you think
space out the chickens?
Maybe Frank and T-Bird and Silas are like, no, we just had a taste of egg and we want nothing more than more eggs. Do not touch that chicken.
I have discovered this concept of eating eggs at a time between breakfast and lunch.
We love eggs so much.
Yeah. I famously do not take notes for podcasts. I took one note for Survivor Africa.
Yes.
And that was to talk about Frank's brunch.
Yes. Yes. So, Frank doesn't know what a brunch is.
Yeah.
Well, like when does it happen?
When do you eat it?
Yeah. Does he not know like what a portmanteau is?
Mm-mm. I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he does kind of say like, when do you eat it? He's like, it's between breakfast and lunch. That's what that is. So I feel like maybe he susses it out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not a big leap.
Haley, do you think he'd know about a cronut?
If he ever heard about a cronut, he would say it's the downfall of the American dream.
Yeah. I don't see Frank having many cronuts. Ethan is going to be the one to say that, look, this sounds crazy, but what if we lost this next challenge on purpose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, if we didn't win this, maybe that would be okay. And I love that from Ethan. I think that's so good. This is like a real standout move from him.
Didn't get a lot of hater-aid doused on him for this, where I feel like anyone else other than hot Ethan bringing this up, people would not like it.
Yeah, Eliza's watching this. She's not happy.
Eliza hates it if people are throwing a challenge.
Stone loves it. This was like Colin Stone's first moment of like throwing challenges.
Genius.
Should they have told T-Bird and Frank about it?
Yes, because again, they hate Silas.
They hate Silas, but what happens if they lose the next challenge?
Maybe that's why they don't tell them, in case that's their follow-up question.
Yeah, but I think T-Bird says in the episode I talked with Kim and Ethan, and if we don't win that challenge, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess like she's fine with it. I think they probably would be fine voting out Frank next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we get the challenge throw, and then basically after we see Silas trying to scramble, and he's basically throwing stuff at the wall, but nothing is sticking for Silas, who is the first victim of the Survivor swap. Lindsay, would we say that is Silas swap screwed?
I mean, I guess in the technical sense, I view this more as poetic justice and a beautiful moment of television. But it pains me to say that he was screwed. But like, yes, technically, I guess if the swap hadn't happened, he's not having a challenge thrown. So like,
sure, but if he would have made better connections with Teresa and Frank earlier on in the game, well, then maybe they wouldn't have been as likely to throw him under the bus.
Exactly. He shouldn't have sucked so much.
Yeah. Have you ever considered not sucking?
Yeah, I think that by the definition, anyway, I think we probably would say that he's swap screwed in that he wasn't going to be the next person voted out. He ends up getting swapped and does. But yeah, it definitely seems like that there might have been some better ways for him to play these first 15 days of the game.
I think you could maybe make the argument more that he was screwed if T-Bird and Frank had voted with the Barons. But the fact that they also voted for him, it's like, see, he just really screwed this up. Like, that's how it was a unanimous vote out. Yeah. So okay. He brought this on himself.
That's a fair point. Jeff's really trying to like throw people off the scent of like, all right, well, you guys are making a lot of assumptions, including that we're going to merge in 3 days. You can believe that if you want, but I wouldn't if I were you.
Do you think he hated that they threw the challenge?
I don't. He didn't make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
He wasn't an executive producer then. He probably didn't know.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
17th cast member.
We did have some funny stuff in the next episode about Clarence with the chickens. Of Clarence really wants to kill the chickens. And so they tell Clarence that, all right, fine, Clarence, if the chicken doesn't lay an egg tomorrow, we'll kill one of the chickens.
Yeah, he says he's having homicidal feelings about the chickens or something. And he's like, it's like, I'm breaking straw for your little asses. That really made me laugh.
Yeah.
Great, Clarence.
This was one of the funniest moments in like the first, you know, pre-All-Stars.
Yeah. And so they go and they find out that Kim Johnson finds an egg the next day. And then she's just like, they just like wait for Clarence to wake up. They just put the egg in the camp on the plate and just wait for Clarence to wake up. And he has such a great reaction. He's like, oh, hell no.
You did it just to spite me.
Yeah.
People like went and yelled at the chickens.
Just the smallest egg possible.
Yeah.
That's no ostrich egg.
But then they still kill a chicken.
I hate you.
Yeah. So it's such a funny moment. All right. So we're going to have some strategy going on of trying to signal to the other team who has the previous votes. Kim Johnson is going to attempt to make an L to symbolize that Lindsay has the previous votes.
Yeah,
I love this. I love it so much. I'm obsessed.
Go on.
It speaks for itself. No, I thought it was brilliant. So she was basically just like, and even Lindsay was like, I think this army now. I think they know it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was just brilliant. It was so simple, so brilliant. I learned it.
It's funny how Kelly almost overthinks it though, because so she does an L and then she does a four, like Lindsay has four votes, and that's kind of like the symbol for a B in sign language. And Kelly's like, I think she knows sign language, so maybe she's also saying Brandon. And I was like, no, she was trying to say four votes, but she almost messes it up by doing that four.
Lex is also pretty confident that Brandon has previous votes. He says that he has a gut feeling that, like, I know that, boy, Frank definitely voted for Brandon.
I think we see, especially in the finale, that Lex's gut always doesn't lead him the right way.
Had some problems.
Yes. His gut is not feeling well by the end of the season. He has a lot of gut feelings in Survivor All-Stars too. Yeah. Yeah. So he has some not so great calls.
Yeah, I think that's just like the confirmation bias where Lex is just being like, Brandon has a vote. And then they see this thing that could be a B in sign language. And they're like, Brandon. Yes. Confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately, we're going to have a chance for the original Baran tribe to try to figure out where to put their votes. They're going to have to make a decision. Lex is saying we need to go with Brandon. That's it. Got that gut feeling. And so as Brandon is talking to Lindsay, Kelly Goldsmith overhears. Haley, did Kelly Goldsmith have a spy shack?
Yes. She's the original inventor.
Yeah. And she overhears. And then Lindsay takes this very personally. And she's like, that's it. I'm going to flip on Brandon now. That's my only move.
And that's what she should have done.
Yeah. And Lindsay, not for anything, I think that is also like another like major like inflection point on the whole season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's why it's extra impressive when Kelly does do it, because Lindsay's like, no, I simply can't vote against my morals. Mm-hmm. It's like, why not? Just do it. You've known this person for like 2 weeks. Like, and she's just like, makes such a thing about it. It's like, Lindsay, can you hear me up on your high horse? Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much, like, because Lex and Brandon have a close bond in the season. And so I don't know how much of that was cultivated here at the post-swap Samburu, where Lex feels comfortable enough to vote out Clarence and to vote out Kelly. But if Brandon ends up not being there, like, I really feel like that Lindsay, Kim Powers, T-Bird, and Frank, like, I think that they could have come back together in the way that the foursome with Brandon was not able to come back together.
Yeah, without that Brandon and Frank tension, I just think you're not going to have that same result. I think like that was the big barrier that couldn't be overcome, and probably Lindsay and T-Bird probably could have connected enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if they still vote off Clarence first after that, if that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
But it's another big decision point. But anyway, Lindsay, she's panicking. But Haley, ultimately, she's going to get back into the fold and then get in on this 3-3 vote. And she realizes at tribal council that basically that her ostrich is cooked. And she gets up and Jeff's like, whoa, hey, where are you going?
She was like, you can't fire me. I quit. Mm-hmm.
Takes all the drama out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like, you're ruining my moment.
Yeah. You're supposed to reveal that you have votes.
Yeah. So eventually, Lindsay ends up going home. She still has her dignity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thankfully.
That makes one of us.
Yes. Okay. Anything else from the pre-merge that either of you want to highlight?
Nothing else for me, I don't think. I think maybe one final thought for me is that I think this illustrates very much to me that like all these intergenerational stereotype things are all just like complete nonsense that are completely made up. Like it was like Gen X is like the slacker generation, and like you can't have a work ethic because I never had it or something like that. And then when we get to millennials versus Gen X, it's like those damn entitled millennials, we're the Gen Xers, we work hard. It's like this is all just nonsense. Like every older generation thinks every younger generation is entitled and has it easier. This is very true,
Lindsay. Yes.
My intergenerational rant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Haley, anything else for you about the pre-merge?
What a great time.
Yes.
Great pre-merge. Excellent pre-merge.
It really is a very fun pre-merge.
Especially for the early seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have all of the dysfunction. We have the first tribe swap that gives it some juice. And there's still a lot more Survivor Africa to go. But that's going to do it here for us here in part one of our conversation. You're not going to have to wait very long to hear part two. But what you're going to want to do is make sure you subscribe to Rob's podcast so you don't miss it. Make sure you subscribe. Rob has a website.com/iTunes for Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you're ready to go. Anything else to say here in part one?
Can't wait for part two.
Okay, make sure you check out part two. We've got everything coming up after the merge, including the infamous extra vote for Lex and everything that happens in the fallout of that. So be sure to join us for part two, plus your feedback questions coming up in the second part of our Survivor Africa countdown here, the 21st best season of all time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in part two.
Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Hyundai, makers of the all-new Hyundai Tucson, where they question everything. Learn more at Hyundai.com. Also, support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And it's hard work, but you know it's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today.